Hi, welcome to the podcast. I am Joe Poznanski, and with me is Michael Shore. Michael, welcome.
Joe, thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. Now, let me ask you. Let me ask you a kind of serious question. I think it's kind of serious. Would you consider us good stewards for our listeners?
I don't know what that means. Do you mean like are we providing a good product or something? Is that what you mean?
No. We know we're not doing that. No, but do you feel that we have a level of honesty with our listeners that is above and beyond, you know, this new world of fake news? Would you agree with that?
Are you saying, like, can our listeners, do you think we've built up a certain amount of trust with our listeners where they believe us, they have a feeling of sort of not just loyalty, but sort of like these are trusted voices, the way that Edward R. Murrow or someone was a trusted voice.
Exactly.
In the old days. Yeah. That's yeah. Exactly. So absolutely. I think 100% I think we have that with our listeners. Yeah.
And I agree with you. And that is why we have to begin this podcast with a little bit of, you know, a little bit of bad news. But I think that we owe this to our readers, listeners. Last week, we did, of course, our famous, now famous, I would call it famous, you be the commissioner.
Last week, I think it was you make the call, wasn't it?
You make the call. We change it every week. I don't remember what it is.
We changed the segment after 1 week because we forgot what it was supposed to be called. Yeah.
Well, it's you be the commissioner or you make the call. And our situation last week was, of course, this is where we break down things that happen in youth baseball and allow people, you know, we give you the correct decision. Runners on first and second, nobody out, ground ball to shortstop. The question was, because the runner on second decided not to run, being a young person who did not fully understand the rules, the question was, could you go over, tag him at second base, step on the bag, and throw to first for a triple play? You and I both made the same call, which, I mean, that's right, 9,999,000 times out of whatever, the next.
Out of 10 million?
10 million, whatever it is. And we both said, no, the runner has the right to second. As long as he's staying on second, you can't tag him until the other runner comes over and steps on the base, at which point two runners on the same base, the lead runner is out. That's wrong. We were wrong. That is incorrect. We gave the wrong call. To our listeners, the fact is, in a force play, the runner instantly forfeits the right to the bag that they're on. So if he had tagged second base first, if he had stepped on the bag first, then he would not have been able to tag the runner because the runner would no longer be forced. But as long as the runner was in a force, you can indeed tag him even while standing on second base, then step on second, then throw to first for the triple play.
Yeah, we blew it. It's interesting. So, in other words, if he had... So, okay, let's just one more time, just so I'm clear. So, the runner on second is standing on the bag and doesn't move.
That's
on a ground ball, which is weird. But weird things do happen in youth baseball sometimes. So, you go over. So, if the shortstop picked up the hard one hopper, went over, and for some reason didn't tag the guy on second, but instead stepped on the base.
Right.
Then the guy... who was the runner standing on second could just keep standing on second and he would be safe.
That is correct.
That is so weird. I mean, there's obviously like the circumstances under which this would ever happen are incredibly remote. But it is weird to think that the right play in that scenario is to, for the runner, is to try to stand on second and avoid being tagged until the fielder touches the bag. It's a very weird situation.
It is weird. I will say this, though, as odd as this is, we had numerous brilliant listeners to this broadcast tell us that we were wrong. This wasn't otherwise I would just say, oh, as one brilliant listener said, but about 50 told us we were wrong. One actually sent a clip, and it's a clip of Prince Fielder. There is a sort of a weird, like, loopy fly ball with a runner on first base. And the guy, fielder kind of like looked like he was going to catch it, and then he dropped it. So the guy stayed at first base, but he dropped the ball. So then fielder walked over to him, and the guy, whoever it was, stayed at first base. He just stayed on the bag. and Fielder like kind of thought about it for a second, then tagged him and then stepped on first base to get the double play. So it actually has happened in the major leagues where this situation came up. Indeed, if you tag the guy who is being forced, he's out.
I want to say one more thing about this, which is that all of this is fake news and we were right.
I think our readers can count on that. Look, we're right. The rule is wrong. I mean, that's just the bottom line.
Well, it's not even a rule. That rule doesn't exist. You're wrong. It didn't happen. That doesn't exist. Well, we said
that's
right.
I think that's fair. I think that's fair. I really do. I really think that's right. All right. Our podcast sponsor this week is Volvo. By the way, did you see? I'm going to freelance a little on Volvo here. Did you see that Volvo actually has starting 2019, all their cars, every one of their cars will either be electric or a hybrid.
I did see that. It's awesome. I love it.
That's awesome. You know,
and it's like this is the internal combustion engine has been the kind of dominant, like, gas guzzling machine on Earth for like 100 years, and I believe this is the internal combustion engine can now see its demise. The demise of the inefficient internal combustion engine is now on the horizon. Though there's a light at the end of the tunnel, it's very exciting, and I applaud Volvo, our sponsor, for making that announcement and for doing this. It's super cool. I drive an electric car. It's awesome. It's wonderful. It does the same exact job as a gas using car. It moves me from my house to various places around my city, and there's no reason for the internal combustion engine to completely dominate the universe anymore. And so, good job, Volvo. I say, kudos to you.
Kudos. It's great to have an environmentally, company that cares about the environment sponsoring
forward thinking, a forward thinking company.
And by the way, I think that there's no question that's why they sponsor the podcast, is because of their forward thinkingness.
That's right. They are ahead of the curve in both their own manufacturing specs and also baseball related podcasts.
Baseball related podcasts. Exactly right. That's exactly right. And I'm not going to read the full thing, but I think everybody by now knows that they have a Midsommar sales event going on, $4,500 off select vehicles. I'm not messing that up again. Select vehicles. And that would not include, as it should not, the V90, XC90 Momentum, or XC90 Excellence. Forget it. You're not getting the money off those. But for the rest of them, $4,500 off, that's a ton of money. Go to your Volvo dealer. I'm sure there's one near you. All right. By the way, I would love to drive an electric car. I am so ready for there to be like electric. In LA, you guys have that. I mean, the rest of the country, we're still catching up on having actual electric filling stations in various places. When that happens, that'll be so awesome.
Yeah, it's getting very easy to do it in Los Angeles and Southern California. And, there's now rumors of partnerships among different companies and stuff to try to make them as ubiquitous as gas stations in the next, 10, 15 years. And when that happens, it'll be so easy. Yeah, it'll be great.
Oh, it'll be great. It'll be absolutely great. All right. So did you get to watch some of the All-Star Game festivities? Were you excited? Did you enjoy it?
I was at work. It happens kind of early out here, so I didn't. Right. I saw mostly the highlights of the Aaron Judge show from Monday night, and then I actually did get to see the All-Star Game from like the sixth inning on or so. I watched it with my son, so I saw Cano's homer. I saw the end of the game, which didn't seem like a very exciting game. It's weird, isn't it? The All-Star Game is fun, but with the way that the game works now, where everybody throws 98 and the strikeouts are at an all-time high and all that sort of stuff, the All-Star Game is never going to be a sort of offensive explosion, probably, right? Like it's this weird, they're backed into this weird corner, because you watch as this game's going on to the seventh inning, eighth inning, ninth inning, what you see is well, Kenley Jansen's coming in for the Dodgers, for the NL, he's unhittable. And then Kimbrel's coming in for the Red Sox, he's pretty unhittable. And then, every reliever coming out of the pen is unhittable. And it's just like, of course, one of them eventually is going to give up a run as the NL did.
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, even when Kenley and Kimbrel aren't at the top of their game, which was the case in that inning, it's still just like, you know, also, by the way, all of the best players are out of the game. So, yes. I mean, they're all the hitters are good, but like all of your Bryce Harpers and your Mike Trouts and your whoever, you know, the real true best hitters are long gone. And so you have Avisail Garcia up in a key spot. Now, he's a great player. Obviously, he's one of the best players in the league. But you never get what you truly want, which is you want Troy Percival against Barry Bonds in that 2002 World Series. And you never get that because all of the starters are out of the game by the third or fourth inning.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There are a few parts of the game that really struck me. One is you look, as long as guys can just have to throw one inning, you're not going to have success offensively. As long as those guys are just throwing, you'll run into a pitcher who doesn't have it that day, and maybe you'll have like a big inning every now and again. But generally speaking, and these are, you know, some of these guys, like Brandon Kinsler and Pat Neshek and Brad Hand, Roberto Osuna, excuse me. I mean, these guys throw, that's all they do. That's their whole job. They go in and they throw one inning, you know, and they blow it out and throw, you know, mid to high 90s, or they have some sort of sick curveball or whatever. But it's only one inning. They can only do it for one inning. And that was sort of never, it's fine in the regular season where that's part of an overall strategy to get to nine innings. But when you have nine of those guys, it sort of defeats the whole purpose of what the pitcher hitter thing is, you know, in my view of how the game is played. So I think that's a real problem. I think that everybody talks about, oh, the players don't play as hard, it doesn't mean as much, whatever. I think the biggest problem is there are too many pitchers. You just can't, you know, it used to be if you were started the game, you went like four, five, six innings going way back, or three innings for sure in the 90s. Nobody throws three innings. Nobody, you know, the two innings is the absolute ultimate, and Max Scherzer only threw one inning as the starter. So I think that's a real problem. I think that's a real issue with the game. But the other thing I would say about the game is exactly what you're saying. Look, the starters play half the game, and the guys who come in play half the game, and everybody gets two at bats, except for Aaron Judge got three, but everybody else gets two at bats. It's not a game like that. I mean, that's spring training. That's not a baseball game where you have strategy and all this. And I do wonder if what they should do is flip it. If you start, like, are voted as a starter by the fans, you're actually a finisher. You actually finish the game. So starters go into the game in the fifth or whatever, and they play it out for the rest of the game or something like that, where your point is 100% right. Suddenly, instead of facing, you know, these guys who are still very, very good players but not the stars of the game, you've got Bryce Harper, you've got Stanton, you've got Judge, you've got these guys coming up in the ninth inning with the game on the line. I think that would be way better.
Okay, so a couple points. One is I am actually more sympathetic to the pitching issue because if you're a pitcher, you're always one pitch away from Tommy John surgery. It's like the idea of like forcing these guys whose livelihoods and futures and careers are, you know, dependent on their ability of their arm tendons to hold together under a repetitive stress. It feels crazy to say like, no, you have to go throw X number of pitches or innings or whatever. So I'm sympathetic to that. I'm sympathetic to that too. Yeah, I know. I did. I wasn't implying you weren't. Just saying like that.
You were
to me,
implying
to
that.
Me that's got to be because this game is an exhibition that it is utterly meaningless no matter how they try to, you know, gussy it up. I feel like you've got to start there. I have a slightly different pitch. Tell me what you think about this. Youth baseball tournaments, of which I have been an observer and my son has been a part recently, they have a one substitution rule, which basically allows you to take a player out of a game and then reinsert him or her into the lineup once. So they say it's once because they don't want nefarious managers playing games where they're subbing their best kid out and then subbing that kid back in to hit third every inning at times and places. Right. But you can do it once. So why not make that the same rule with the All-Star game? which is to say the starters get to start, and then, you know, Bryce Harper and Mike Trout and Stanton and Mookie Betts and whoever, they all come out of the game. Goldschmidt comes out of the game. And then starting in the seventh inning, you can reinsert them. You basically put them back into the lineup. And I know it stinks because if you're Avisail Garcia and you're about to get an eighth or ninth inning at bat against, you know, against Kenley Jansen or whoever to in order to, you know, have your big moment, and you get swapped out for Mike Stanton or for whoever, that stinks, right? But that is what you want to see if you're a fan. You want to see the best pitchers in baseball against the best hitters in baseball. And too often in that game, in that silly exhibition, you don't get that. And so I feel like there should be a one resubstitution rule or something that allows us to get those matchups and would perhaps lead to a little more scoring.
I'm good with that. I'm good with that. But the problem to me with the one substitution thing is, and this is baseball deals with this over and over and over again, is trying to find new ways to do things without sort of changing the rules that have guided the game forever. You make it that way, then suddenly it's clearly an exhibition and it's nothing else, which is what it is. But that baseball doesn't want to admit that. Baseball wants to believe that the All-Star game is a meaningful baseball game in many ways. How about this? Let me ask you about this one, because this is sort of along the lines of what you're saying. But instead of a one substitution rule, what if starters play the first three innings and last three innings of the game? And everybody else gets inserted in the middle of the game. That's it. You get, you know, your second nine or whatever, get put in from 3 to 6 or 4 to 6, I guess. Everybody should get one at bat that way if you're a backup. There would be some people that would be left out. But, you know, again, what this never was meant to be like a, hey, everybody gets to play kind of game. It's for the fans. It's supposed to be exciting. Right. So what about that? What about a 1 through 3, 6 through 9 type of thing?
So you basically, what you're saying is you have two complete lineups instead of just like a bunch of backups. And well, you know, what you have to do then, which I'm fine with, because again, it's pointless. whole thing is pointless, is you have to eliminate the one guy per team rule. Because if you wanted to really, unless everybody is going to end up playing at a position, you know what I mean? You're going to have, if you just do a two complete lineups, you know, one guy at every position, and you tried to maintain the one guy from every team rule, and you tried to maintain a general sense of like lineup construction, you're going to end up with like four, you know, shortstop or third baseman who, you know, two of them have to play in left and at first, and one of them has to catch, you know. So
that's right.
But if you got rid of that rule and instead just said, we're doing it like the all NBA team, we're doing it by position, we're saying it's the best, we know, best pitcher, best catcher, best first baseman, second baseman, et cetera, and then the second best first baseman, second baseman, shortstop, et cetera. If you just did it that way, you could just say, like, all right, here's the way we're doing this. Everybody, the A team plays innings 1 through 3, which means everyone's guaranteed one at bat. The B team plays innings 4, 5, and 6, which means everybody's guaranteed one at bat. And then the A team goes back in for the end of the game in order to create the best drama we can create. I love that. I think that's great.
That would be really fun. That would really, really be fun. By the way, you talk about playing out of position. Avisail Garcia, who you mentioned, played center for like the first time like in 5 years. I mean, Avisail Garcia is, God bless him, he's not that great a right fielder. I mean, they put him in center at the end of the game, you know, with a one-run lead. He's playing center field.
Well, who made the catch in right? Was it Upton? He was
that
playing
was
right
field. Upton, he was playing right field.
Yeah, so everybody was playing out of position anyway. And I feel like, you know, it's fun when the All-NBA team is announced. It's really fun to see, like, how it all breaks down, because you really get to sense – you get to pretend in your mind that this is a real team. And there, of course, have been times when in the heyday of, you know, Jeter, Garcia, Parra, A-Rod at short in the American League back in the late 90s, it was like, well, who starts and who cut? Like, what are you going to do, right? And also, by the way, back then there was, you know, who was it? Carlos Guillen for the Mariners. There was one year where he was just as good as everybody else. And so it was like, well, we can't have four shortstops. And so someone's going to get left out. And one year, I think Joe Torre actually did choose all three of them, because that was back when the managers chose the backups. But regardless, there will be certainly times when, if you went by this new system we're talking about, to, like the first team and the second team, basically, you're going to run into situations where deserving guys get left off. But that also happens now. By the way, when next year, when the Western Conference All-Star team is chosen, there's going to be some crazy stuff going on where, like, Anthony Davis isn't an All-Star because the 14 out of the 15 best players in the entire league are in the West. So, you know, you're allowing for the true undeniable fact that no matter how you do this, there are going to be deserving players who get royally snubbed. Then this, to me, is a better... I think we've solved it, Joe.
We've solved it.
We solved the All-Star game. Yeah, why don't we implement... Who do you want? Should you call Manfred or should I call him? I've got his number on my phone.
Why don't you call him and then we'll follow up with him later. Let's just do it that way.
Sure. You call him. Yeah, why don't you call him? I'll email him and let him know you're going to call. And then I'll kind of hit him. I'll come at him from the other side in a couple hours.
It works perfect. It's good. Look, he'll be so relieved because he'll be like, thank you. Somebody just solved this for me.
I don't know why it took me so long, me, the commissioner of baseball, to come up with this plan.
But he would know that certainly our solution would be the correct solution.
Well, I think he'll be very also impressed at what good stewards we are for our listeners. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like us coming clean about how we blew that call is going to really impress him in terms of our integrity.
No question.
I should officially formally retract my claim of fake news from earlier because I don't want that to be the thing that makes Rob Manfred not listen to us.
By the way, I have to say this. This is just a complete aside, but you mentioned the Justin Upton play that he made, which was a very nice play. It was on Corey Seager. Corey Seager was the one that hit the ball, right. Line drive to right. I was sat on the plane on the way back from the All-Star game next to Corey Seager's parents.
Really?
They couldn't have been nicer. Just the nicest people. Super duper nice. You know, they're from North Carolina. They're from Charlotte. They actually Kannapolis, and just super duper nice. And he was saying, you know, he was. The dad was talking a little bit about launch angle and how Seager just missed the launch angle on that ball because otherwise it would have been a home run and that would have been awesome and everything. And Corey Seager, you know, I mean, what do you say? You say to your, you know, the you know, he is not only the father of Corey Seager, also the father of Kyle Seager.
Right.
Basically, it's like, how did you do that, man? Like, how the heck did you do that? Two very good. I mean, Seager is insanely good. Not that Kyle Seager is not. Kyle Seager's an all-star and a Gold Glove winner and total stud. Two of those guys in the same family. I mean, look, my dad tried that. It didn't work for him. Like, how in the world? You've got a son? Like, how you know, wouldn't you want, like, advice on how to turn your son into a Major League Baseball star without, of course, totally screwing him up and being a stage father and all that sort of thing. But wouldn't you want advice on that?
I think, you know, of course you would, but also so much of it is genetic lottery, right?
Of course
it's like
is. Yeah,
there's
course.
Corey Seager is what, like 6'3", 230, and Kyle's probably around the same. And, you know, the best kid who plays in my son's Little League travel team is just like a natural, an absolute natural athlete. The first kid in his age group to hit a home run over the fence in a game, which he did at age 9, which is insane. It's like, you know, and his older brother, he has an older brother who plays on who's like, I don't know, 11 or maybe 12, 13, who plays on an AAU basketball team that's like, you know, a ranked nationally, like top 20 ranked program. Yeah. And, you know, they're just like they're really nice kids and the parents are really nice. And their mom was a competitive tennis player in college and, you know, their dad was an athlete. And it's just sort of like, they just got really good genes and they work really hard and they have they have these very bright athletic futures ahead of them. It's pretty. Yeah, it's like so much of it is just that. It's like my son has very good hand eye coordination. He's a very good fielder. He's really like, you know, he's in the upper echelon of his age group for baseball, but he's also like the shortest kid on his team. And it's just like at a certain level, you know, youth sports is about mass. It's just like how much mass do you have? And it doesn't mean that you can't be a good player if you're undersized. It just means that if you're not undersized, if you're in fact oversized, you have a giant advantage. And then that advantage leads to you getting more, being more confident, having more, getting more reps, playing on more teams, having more, better competition. And then, you know, it's one of those Malcolm Gladwell things where like there are certain just luck aspects of the way that you develop as a kid that will lead to you being Corey Seager. Some of it, you know, 80% of it is, or let's say 70% of it is incredibly hard work and dedication, and 30% of it is a roll of the dice.
Yeah, I think that's right. But I also would say this, it's so easy for any parent, and this is, I see this over and over again, to forget just how high that ladder is. I mean, that's the big thing. You know, I have a very, very good friend whose son is a superb swimmer, like just a fantastic swimmer. For he's 16 now. And he's just a fantastic swimmer. He's probably, but by the time he's a senior, we both think that he'll win the Ohio State title in a couple of different events. Swim. I mean, so he's ungodly. He's a terrific, incredible. He's the best athlete. You know, I mean, I've known him his whole life. I carried him when he was a baby, whatever. But he's the best athlete that I've known my whole life. You know how far he is from the Olympics? I mean, you know how far away that is? And he knows that. I mean, he's a super smart kid, and he gets it. He understands, you know? He's up against somebody else in Ohio who's, like, incredible, like, going to Stanford, like, a top-level superstar swimmer. You know how far that guy is from the Olympics? You know what I mean? I mean, it's like, it's the ladder just keeps going up and up and up and up and up. That's why, to me, to have two guys, no matter what your genetic makeup is, and certainly the genetics are a huge, huge part of it, to have two, not just Major League Baseball players, but Major League Baseball stars in the same family, it's incredible. I just think it's incredible.
Yeah, it's it's a weird thing, right? When you're a kid, like my son has already changed his kind of future goals from mm-hmm. being a major leaguer to being an announcer. Now he wants to be an announcer.
That's awesome.
Yeah, and it's like, it's because even at nine, he can see, like, he sort of intuitively understands that in order to get to the majors, you have to be the very, 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 very best person. Yeah. And so he's not the very, 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 very best person on his team. And so I think he's made the leap, right? It's like, well, if I'm not the best person on the 9U pony team, then how am I going to ever be the best? Like, because you keep getting weeded out, right? The best kids move on, and then they're not the best kid anymore. And then there's a new best kid, and that kid moves on, and then he's not the best kid. There's some other kid. So, like, he's already kind of intuited that true sad fact that we all go through when we're kids, which is, oh, I'm never going to make the majors. So he's already switched to, like, for a while he was like, I think I want to be an umpire. Now he's like, I want to be an announcer. Because Vin Scully retired. And yeah. So he's like, sensing there might be an opening in the... he's not wrong. Yeah, I mean, you know, Charlie Steiner's getting up there, too. By the time he's in a position to announce, you know, who knows? So it's a weird thing to watch your own son come to the conclusion that you inevitably came to, you know, 30 years before, which is, oh, I'm not going to be a Major League Baseball player. That's interesting, you know.
But you know what's weird? I mean, we're already on this subject. So you know what's weird is, and I say this with all due whatever modesty for you, toward you or whatever, but you're that guy, like in your profession, you're a guy who, like, if you had dreamed about writing, being an executive producer for successful television shows as a 9-year old, you know, that would seem attainable. And as you get older, it seems less and less and less attainable for you know, millions of people across the country. And frankly, even I'm like that, you know, I mean, where I'm writing sports for a living, and how many people would love to have my job? I mean, it's insane. So why is it? Because that definitely happened to me. And it probably wasn't much older than your son's age, where I looked and said, there are other players on this team that are better than me. So that doesn't really bode well for my major league future. I mean, if I'm the fourth best player on my team, then I'm not really, that's not great, you know, as far as that. But I still thought, oh, you know what? I could be like a sports writer and like work like and make a living doing this crazy thing and all that. I mean, it just seems weird that in sports, it seems more obvious to you, I think.
Well, yeah. I mean, first of all, thank you for your kind words. I do consider myself the Avisail Garcia of comedy writing.
You play center also. You could
play out of position. But I the obvious reason, right, is that I didn't know, for example, that comedy writing existed until I was 16. Like it's right. When you're 9 and you fall in love with baseball, or 7 and you fall in love with baseball, and you start playing it in your backyard, you're like, okay, well, this is what I'm going to do. This is a thing I love, and I'm good at it, and I'm going to do that. And so it's just a thing that occurs to you as a possibility, because you're looking at those guys who you worship and idolize, and they're playing the same game you're playing. They're in a uniform. They're holding a bat. They're on a pitcher's mound. They're picking up the ball and throwing it. And so it's a tangible, immediate kind of possibility in a way that a lot of other careers aren't. Now, the same thing, by the way, when I was probably 15 or 16, I stopped playing baseball and I started contemplating a future as a sports writer. That was my immediate change, I'll be a sports writer. And I devoured all of the, you know, Sports Illustrated and Sporting News and all that sort of stuff. Sport Magazine.
Sport Magazine
was great. Sure. And you know, I like ripped off a whole, you know, articles, or at least, you know, styles and stuff, and would write English papers in the style of those men and women who wrote for those magazines. And so, you know, I think that, like, at different ages, If you're obsessed with sports, at different ages you have different goals, and the goals go from, you know, player to then maybe somewhere in the middle you go, like, well, maybe you'll be a coach or an announcer, and then maybe you'll be a sports writer, and then, you know, that is, I would imagine, that's how most people end up in your profession, right?
Yeah.
It's like they went from player to something else to sports writer, and it's just because they love being around the game and they figure out how to do it.
Yeah, no, that's right. I think that's right. And you don't know the odds, and you don't care particularly. I mean, you know, I was probably, you know, even a little bit older than that when I kind of realized that this was an actual job, like being a sports writer. I mean, I'd been reading sports writing all my life. It never occurred to me there were people behind that. You know, it just, you don't think about it that way. Just their stories are there, and, you know, and I knew some of the names, but I still didn't ever associate them with actual human beings, you know? And so, yeah, I think that's true. I just think it's funny that maybe that's just the way it is. Maybe what happens is you have the reality hits you, not only that, hey, I'm not good enough, there are all these people that are better than me, but the reality hits you that, you know, I can do something else. Like, there's something else I can do that I can love and enjoy. And maybe what really has to happen in order for you to be successful, golfer, tennis player, whatever, is just go, there's nothing else that I would enjoy this much. There's nothing,
right.
There's nothing else that could drive me to just work nonstop. So maybe that's part of it too.
Here's an interesting question for you, theoretically, and then we should move on to our draft. How many people out there have been, you know, like a super, super crazy stud athlete in a sport where you can make a ton of money? So baseball, basketball, I guess football, although football less interesting than
interesting.
But how many people have there been like that who were like, you know, 16, let's say 15 or 16, and were you could absolutely turn pro if you just keep going. And we're like, no, I'm not doing it. I'm going to do something else. I mean, there obviously have been some, right? But like, it's interesting to imagine that there are people walking the earth right now who could have been successful major league baseball players or professional basketball players who decided, this isn't for me, I don't want to do this, and walked away. I mean, you know that that's true of, let's say, tennis. Because tennis is being an individual game, the burnout rate, the attrition rate is incredibly high.
Right. Yeah.
And so in every sport, but like these sports where you can make a lot of money, and the reason I say football is less interesting for this hypothetical is because there are other obviously good reasons to not play football,
right?
There's if you're aware of the risk to your body and your brain and everything else, you might be more likely to quit. But how many people are there? Give me a number. How many people out there could have been major league baseball players or professional basketball players who at age, let's say by age 16, just walked away?
I would. There certainly are those people out there, no question. I imagine that number is pretty small, though. I mean,
yeah. Well, you know, there's only like 600 Major League Baseball players.
Well, that's right. Well, I mean, I think you would ask the question: how many people start in the minor leagues who have like a real future? And, you know, because you're only 18, assuming you come right out of high school, how many start in the minor leagues and then after a year say, "Nah, I don't love this. This is not even though I have a bright future." I'm not doing it. They're just not that many that do that. And so it almost would have to be younger, you know, it almost have to be like at 14 or 13.
14, yeah.
Where you're like, you know what, this guy is an incredible athlete, but he doesn't love it. He wants to do something else. Which is cool. I mean, I think that's great. You know, you hear from people that say that all the time. Say, oh, I was a really, really good baseball player at 14, but I loved science or I loved writing or I loved something else. I mean, I don't know how honest they're being with us, but I mean, you hear people say that. I imagine younger. I think once you get to 16 or 17, if you're that good, it's awfully tough to walk away at that point because you've done like most of the journey, right? I mean, it feels like, you know, you're 5 years away from being where, you know, where the money is incredible. So it's a great question, though. It's a great question.
I'm gonna say there's eight. There's eight people.
Oh, so you had a number. Okay, actually want a number. Yeah, eight.
I wanted a number. Yeah, I'm gonna say eight.
Eight to 15, somewhere in that range of 8 to 15 people. All right, one last thing before we get our draft. Our draft is going to be salty snacks, by the way, just to get people excited about this draft. Salty snacks. Did you see Andy Murray? Yesterday, Andy Murray lost at Wimbledon. He looked like he was really, really hurt in the last couple of sets. He lost to Sam Querrey, the first American male to go to the semifinals at a major in forever and at Wimbledon since like 2001 or something. So he has asked the question. Andy Murray's asked the question: how do you feel about Sam Querrey being the first American to reach the semifinals at Wimbledon in forever? And Murray said, male. He just said, male. And the guy kind of like giggled a little bit, like, oh, yeah, male player. That's what I meant. And Murray did not giggle, did not smile. He just had this look like, you are so, you realize like the greatest women's tennis player ever is American, right? You do know that, right? You're aware. I mean, he just had this look on his face. I just thought, moment of the tournament right there. I just thought that was so awesome.
It was the best. It was wonderful, and it was like sometimes there's these little, like an unexpected source,
right?
These little signs of the immense amount of progress that society has made in the last like 30, 40 years. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, that's what it is. That's like that guy. Who, by the way, like the narrative of that guy is first British Wimbledon winner, right? And in forever, which is obviously in my mind what the question was getting at, right? It's like, as a person who has been the first person from this country to get this thing, how do you feel about this, the guy who beat you? And to have him not, it's like, first of all, like, get outside of his own frame of reference,
right?
In such a sort of like a self-assured way, and also then shut down this kind of moment of sort of ignorant sexism. I was like, that is a huge step forward for the universe. Like, just really well done, buddy. Like, so happy that happened, and happy that it like got picked up by the news media and thrown around and stuff. And by the way, Venus is now, as we record this, Venus is now going to the finals, and it's insane. It's utterly insane. Like that those two should never be slighted in this way, right?
Ever.
Like the Williams family should never. For goodness sake, have they not earned the right not to be forgotten or slighted when it comes to the history of tennis? I mean, good gravy.
Yeah,
I loved it. I thought it was the, you're right, moment of the tournament. In fact, not only moment of the tournament, like the moment of all of Wimbledon, at least since Murray won, I would say, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. It was great. It was so great. We ought to do, at some point, we ought to do a special podcast just about the Williams sisters, because that story, I don't care how many times that story gets told, that story of those two becoming two of the greatest tennis players, greatest athletes in American history, the greatest tennis player. And then, by the way, Venus, like, you'd think, oh, Venus was a good player too. Yeah, she won 5 Wimbledons and might win her 6. She wasn't just a good player. She wasn't Abigail Garcia, okay?
No.
She's one of the 5 greatest players ever also, you know?
I mean, she's like probably like 4th or 5th greatest all time, right? Yeah, like, yeah. And then her sister is the greatest by a wide margin.
It's crazy. All right, Salty Snacks is our draft. That's all we discussed. And who has the first pick? Do you have the first pick?
I believe you do, and I don't really care. So go ahead.
You didn't really care. All right. So first pick in the Salty Snacks draft, I am going to take, and I'm going to go right away for something a little bit controversial, see if we can go with the commissioner on this. I'm going to go with pretzels with my first pick, because I want all pretzels. So I want, like, the small, crunchy pretzels that you can get in bags. But I also want the pretzels that are on the grill at ballparks, like the big soft pretzels. Like, if you go to Philadelphia, you can get, like, awesome pretzels there. Chicago has great pretzels. I want all of them. I want every kind of pretzel. I love pretzels of all kinds. I do not have any specific pretzel that I do not like. I like pretzel. I don't, you know what? That's not true. I don't necessarily like those big, fat, hard pretzels, like the kinds that they sell in bags sometimes, that they're like, they're shaped like big pretzels, and they're really, really hard. And I'm not crazy about those. Every other kind of pretzel is awesome. So first pick, I'm taking pretzels.
I mean, you can have them.
Oh my gosh.
I mean,
you're down on pretzels?
There's one good kind of pretzel, which is a warm, soft pretzel.
Yeah, right. That's right.
That's it. The rest of them are garbage. The every kind of, like, out of the box pretzel you can eat is paper. It's a thick wad of paper with salt on it. Those big hard ones are nasty. Pretzel sticks are gross. They're oversalted. They're terrible. Most pretzels are bad. There's one good kind, and the good kind is really good. So, like, congratulations. Really? In your massive, like, fishing net that you just threw out to trawl in all brands of pretzels, you managed to also get warm soft pretzels, which is the only kind.
Warm
soft pretzels barely make my top 10. Like, you can have all the pretzels you want. It's old, crusty, stale bread with salt on it. Like, congratulations. You've already lost. You've already lost the draft. Because no matter what, even if you take a bunch of other good stuff with 2 through 5, the fact that you chose pretzels, this is a Ted Ginn Jr. situation. You just chose Ted Ginn Jr., not number 9 overall or whatever the Dolphins chose him at, but you chose Ted Ginn Jr. number 1 overall. Like, you had huge, like, anchor, like Orlando Pace type offensive linemen waiting to be drafted that could anchor your offensive line for years to come. You had franchise quarterbacks. You had Andrew Luck out there on the board. No, you chose Ted Ginn Jr.
No,
he's fast. That's what just happened.
I don't think so. I don't think so. I'm getting pretzels, all pretzels, which is great, but I'm getting all the soft pretzels, which is the single best snack.
So what you're going to do then is eat the soft pretzels and throw all the other ones in the garbage where they belong? Congratulations.
What are you? Go ahead with your pick. Go ahead.
I don't even know what to do now. I mean, every single one of the things on my board is better than pretzels.
Okay. All right. Let's hear it.
Man, I don't know. There's no obvious. I mean, look. A lot of people are going to yell at me for this. A lot of people are going to say that the number 1 overall should be a Dorito. That's going to be a popular thing. A lot of people are going to say it's like Cheetos or popcorn. I'm going with almonds. I'm going with salted almonds. Salted almonds are the best snack. They're delicious. They're incredibly addictive. They also have the insane benefit of kind of being good for you, which is among salty snacks incredibly rare. And I also just, you can put them on ice cream. You can put them on anything. You eat them with fruit. They're delicious. You can put them in salads. anything you want. They're great. I'm choosing salted almonds.
Yeah, all right. They're fine. Salted almonds are good. I'm not down on salted almonds. They're fine. They're fine. Here's the question, though, because I have on my list, my second pick overall, is a snack that includes salted almonds. So do I not get the almonds?
No, go ahead. It literally doesn't matter. You chose pretzels number one, so you can do whatever you want.
My second pick it was going to be my first pick, but I kind of thought that you would be wise enough to understand the awesomeness of pretzels. As it turns out, I could have waited on that pick. But my second pick is going to be the premium snack, the premium nut mix. So in the premium nut mix is your almonds, your cashews, which are awesome, fantastic. There are pecans in there as well, but there are no peanuts. No peanuts. I'll get into peanuts later. That is such a good thing. I mean, if I'm just hungry, it's sort of, you know, you talk about being good for you. It's not, you know, it's fairly good. It's the low carb thing too, that's, I guess, pretty good. And they're delicious. They're just absolutely delicious. And I want that variety. That's the thing. The salted almonds are certainly a prize of the premium nut mix. But they're all good. I like every one of those nuts, and I like the variety. Premium nut mix with my second pick.
I mean, I have to say, the commissioner's going to come down on you super hard here. You're not even choosing snacks. You're choosing like categories.
No,
you're choosing all pretzels and all. I'm trying to have some integrity with the way that I go about this, but you're choosing all pretzels and now all nuts, basically.
No, just those three. Those are the ones in the premium.
Yeah, but come on, like I broke down nuts into individual categories.
I did not
categories.
Know you could do that. I did not know. Right. We never talk about these things.
I guess this is like some of us like to approach these things with integrity, and some of us don't. I guess that's what I'm learning today. all right.
No, by the way, so will you pull out the almonds and that'll be all you'll have? You'll just have an almond, like a thing of almonds, or do you go with like a general nut mix?
Well, I do both, but I wouldn't, in a draft of salty snacks, I wouldn't try to say like all nuts in one.
No, I didn't say all
category.
Nuts. I said the premium. You know, they sell them together.
The premium.
Right?
Yes, I know. But that premium mix has almonds, cashews, and this has peanuts in it too, right? Almonds, cashews.
They're not in a premium nut mix. That's what I'm telling you. There are no peanuts in there.
What's the other one? Almonds, cashews, and what?
And pecans.
And pecans. Well, I mean, good Lord. Why don't you just choose all food? Why don't you? Well, your third pick should be food, because that'll give you everything that has salt in it.
Premium nut mix, right. Delicious.
I'm gonna pick. I'm going out of the world of I'm going into the cracker world. I'm gonna pick Triscuits, and a lot of people think Triscuits are boring.
They are.
But because you've eaten them since you were a kid, Triscuit is the best cracker. Secretly, the Triscuit is the best cracker. It is so good and so. Like it's the they have a thing in the world of snack food they call the bliss point. Are you familiar with this concept?
I am not familiar with the bliss point. No.
Okay, so it's the bliss point is this combination that snack food engineers have named it the bliss point. It's the combination of sort of crunch, saltiness, like sweetness, mouth feel, like it's like the maximum pleasure that you get from eating the snack. That makes you want more of it. So it can't sate your desire for it. So if you make something too salty or too sweet or too flavorful, you'll eat it and go like, ooh, boy, that's rich. I don't want to have any more of that. So what they're looking, the bliss point is the perfect combination of sort of crunch, size, mouthfeel, color, smell, whatever, that gets you to fully enjoy the product and then also crave another one. And in the world of, I don't remember where I read this. It might have been Fast Food Nation or some similar book. Basically, the Dorito, the classic Dorito, is known in the world of fast food to have like the perfect bliss point. It's the most kind of addictive snack. I don't personally agree with that. I kind of get it. I personally think the Cheeto has a higher bliss point than the Dorito. Yeah, but. Triscuit has a pretty great bliss point. It has a pretty like satisfying. There's something about the texture of it, the sort of wheat texture of it, and the saltiness, and you can eat it with cheese, or you can eat it with peanut butter. You can eat it with a lot of different things, and it tastes good. And I feel like, I know it seems like it's boring because you've had Triscuits forever, and you would never think to yourself, I'm going to go get a Triscuit. But when you do go get that Triscuit, you are so happy. It's the best cracker. I'm going Triscuit number two.
Okay. It's boring. That's just a boring pick. I mean, it just is boring. And the only way I'm eating a Triscuit, and I like Triscuits, they're fine. The only way I'm eating a Triscuit is if I'm putting something else on it. I'm not going to eat like a bunch of Triscuits with nothing. I'm not going to have it without cheese or peanut butter or something to dress it up. I mean, how good of a cracker can it be if it desperately needs like a partner to be like edible?
It can be really good. It's a really good cracker, and it's good by itself, and it's good with other stuff on
it's
it. What do you want?
That good by
you're angry.
It's not
you're angry
good
at,
by
you're
itself.
You're angry at Triscuit's versatility. That's what you're telling me. How good can Ben Zobrist be if he plays four or five different positions?
You did. You just took the Ben Zobrist of salty snacks. In
yeah,
the
Ben Zobrist,
round.
one of the best and most valuable players in baseball. Yeah, I took Ben Zobrist in the second round. You took Ted Ginn Jr. number one overall. You have no standing here.
I took Mike Trout with the first overall pick.
You know who you took with the first pick in baseball terms? You took Willie Mo Pena. You saw Willie Mo Pena taking batting practice, and you were like, man, this guy hits at like 500 feet. I'm taking Willie Mo Pena first overall. And then I was like, okay, I'll take Mike Trout and Ben Zobrist.
First of all, you're admitting he's Ben Zobrist. You just took Ben Zobrist.
Ben Zobrist is an incredibly important baseball player.
And you took Ben Zobrist.
Oh my God! Go ahead. You've now lost. You've lost ethically, and you've also just straight up lost.
All right, that was just. It was fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's a perfectly fine cracker. All right, with my third pick, I am going to take popcorn. I cannot wait to hear your down level on popcorn. Popcorn is just, I mean, it's just delicious. It's just awesome every time you eat it, no matter what. It's great for all circumstances. People are willing to spend like $20 for a bag when they go to the movies because they feel like they have to have it at the movies. It's the ultimate, like, just you don't even think about it. You just throw them in your mouth. They're so delicious. If there is a bliss point for things like popcorn, and it's God made the popcorn. So I'm just going to just say totally third pick, steal popcorn.
No, it's a good pick. I'm not going to argue with this. It's a good pick. It was going to be my third pick. It's a great snack. No problem with popcorn. It also means that I now have to go into the like, more sort of manufactured snacks to do this, because popcorn is somewhat natural if you
when you have your popcorn, do you butter it up or do you any
no.
of that stuff?
I find the butter to be too much, like the greasy slimy butter. Just regular popcorn, by the way, is cooked in oil. It's not like there isn't any fat on the popcorn. It's cooked. It's heated up and cooked in oil,
right?
And then salted. That's plenty. And I don't also tend to go in so much for the like candied popcorns. I don't know about you, but I don't love the like
huge. I'm not a huge fan of the. I mean, every now and again we do have like, because my daughter loves it, and so we have like a bag of like the Chicago mix popcorn, which will have like a little bit of cheddar popcorn and a little bit of like the caramel stuff, and it's fine. Regular popcorn unlike Triscuits, it doesn't need anything to be added to it to make it great.
Oh my God. All right. I'm gonna go with the most, to in my mind, the most delicious manufactured piece of fast food snack food garbage. Sure. Which is Fritos. Fritos are so good. It's crazy how good they are. It's unpleasant because the experience of eating them makes me very, very conscious that this food product that I'm shoveling into my mouth was invented by scientists, like evil scientists, to get me to to get my brain to like the synapses in my brain to like fire repeatedly as quickly as possible. It is so, it's like McDonald's. It's a thing that was manufactured and designed by people in a laboratory to say like, how can we make the human brain like lose itself in the bliss of this product.
Right. How do however, we manipulate people? Yes.
Yes. And however, they've done an amazing job. And because the Frito, I have to like physically restrain myself from eating Fritos if I see them somewhere, because if I start, I will not stop.
Yeah. Well, whoever, Dr. Frito or whatever, who invented the Frito. Yeah. You talk about that bliss point thing that I just now learned about and thoroughly love. God, Frito has to have a pretty high bliss level,
huge.
Right?
It's yeah, not like very
you,
high,
you have
yeah.
a whole bag of Fritos and that bag's not surviving. I mean, it's just there's no – you're not stopping and saying, oh, I've had enough Fritos. Like that doesn't that urge never goes away when you have Fritos. Now, speaking of this, because this will, I'm sure, come up again if we have any other manufacturer type things. What do you think about the other sort of flavored Fritos, like the barbecued Fritos?
Zero interest. Right. Literally zero interest. I want nothing but classic Frito, and that goes for most of the chip type things.
Yeah.
There's no way to improve upon the weird fake corn, salted corn taste of the Frito. It's impossible. Don't try. Don't ever try.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny because when I was in college, there used to be, obviously there were snack machines all over, and I would eat the barbecued Fritos like all the time. Like I was sort of obsessed with the barbecued Fritos. And I had one not that long ago. Like there was a bag and I'm like, oh, barbecue Fritos. I haven't had a barbecue Frito since college. And I ate it and I'm like, this is disgusting. What in the world was I thinking back then? I mean, it's like just the Frito is the Frito. You don't need anything else. That's it. It's done. So
yeah,
it's a good pick. It's a good pick. It's terrible for you. It's a good pick. Well, they're all terrible. I mean, most of the stuff that we're getting is terrible for you. All right. With my – are we the fourth round already? Is that where we are? So fourth
That's
pick.
Right.
Again, I'm going to be pushing the commissioner on this one a little bit. I like mixes. I'm like a mix person. Like I like snack mixes. I like the Chex snack mix. So I'm going to pick the Chex snack mix. Now, it has some of the other things that were – that we've already drafted, so I don't know how that works, but I don't care at this point. It has some pretzels in there. It has like the Chex cereal thing, which is actually I don't like those in cereal, but when they're salted, they're fine. They're crunchy. They're good. But it also has those really good little Melba toast things that I think are absolutely fantastic. And could have just taken Melba toast, but I wouldn't eat necessarily Melba toast on its own. I like it in the mix. So with my fourth pick, I'm going to take the Chex snack mix.
What is going to happen to you when you have to be hospitalized for dehydration because you've eaten nothing but the driest, stalest, saltiest bread you can find, and you literally all of the water in your body gets absorbed into the little pieces of Melba toast and all of the pretzel sticks and hard pretzels that you're eating. What is wrong with you? That stuff is disgusting. Who chooses Chex Mix because of the Melba toasts? It's the thing. It's the filler. It's the caulk between the tiles in your bathroom. It's awful.
Okay.
I don't understand. It's so dry and it's like stale. It's stale bread. You're willingly eating stale bread and you're citing stale bread as a positive in terms of like what you like why you're choosing this.
I like my Melba toast. I like it in there. I'm just telling you I like it. I do not decry your selections. I feel like you're
because mine are sane.
No, they're not. They're really. You took Triscuit with the second pick overall.
Yeah, Triscuits are great. Chex Mix is garbage, man. This is insane. And also, by the way, Chex Mix has pretzels in it. You've already chosen all pretzels. What is your obsession with pretzels? It's unhealthy.
It's all unhealthy. You just took Cheetos.
No, I took Fritos.
Oh, you took Fritos. Cheetos are coming.
Yeah, I'll take Cheetos now. Watch this. Cheetos, number four. Cheetos, a disgusting...
So disgusting.
Warped witch's finger of fried cornmeal covered in fake orange dust, deeply fried and salted. The best thing you've ever eaten.
Now you like the little thin, like braided ones, or the big?
They're all good. No, they're all good. Again, an evil scientist, Werner von Frito, invented the Frito, and Wilhelm von Cheeto invented the Cheeto, and they're evil scientists who like figured out a magic recipe of how to make your brain synapses go loopy. And it's amazing. There are people I know who have in our writer's room who eat them with chopsticks, which I think is kind of an ingenious way to avoid the Cheeto dust solution problem. And it's a very funny thing to see people sort of like delicately and daintily eating the world's grossest and yet most delicious snack food with chopsticks. It's kind of an ingenious.
I'm doing that now. That is the greatest thing I've ever heard. Okay, so look, I actually do not of that ilk of chip, of that ilk of food. Cheetos are not my favorite. You know, and they're, to me, they're well behind Doritos. But the idea of eating them with chopsticks has sort of brought me around. That idea, I could see that. I got to do that. That sounds awesome to me. So you just have people sitting around your room. They're throwing around ideas, and they're just eating Cheetos with chopsticks. That's what you're telling me.
That's right. It's hilarious.
I think that's the greatest thing I've ever heard. All right, that saves that pick. All right, that totally saves that pick. All right, with my fifth pick, you know, there are a lot of anything with salt on it. Let's be honest, is not going to be terrible. But I'm going to take the. And I'm going to take a specific brand this time to bring your ethical things together. I'm going to take the Utz barbecued potato chip as my fifth pick, and it will be Utz and it will be barbecue. All Utz chips are delicious. Really, most potato chips are delicious. My wife would choose Pringles at this point, which I don't think is a great chip, but again. Put salt on it, it's fine. The Utz barbecue potato chip is delicious. Couldn't be a better thing to have, like when you're barbecuing. It tastes good with everything. There's nothing else to say. Utz barbecue potato chip with my fifth pick.
Here's what's happened now. In the first round, you chose Willy Mo Pena first overall. You saw Willy Mo Pena taking batting practice. You were like, that guy hits long home runs. I'm taking Willy Mo Pena first overall.
Right.
Then with your fifth pick, here's what happened. You saw Ricky Henderson hit a home run in the old timers softball game in Miami. And you were like, you know, I'll bet Ricky Henderson can still play. I'm going to draft Ricky Henderson, 59-year-old Ricky Henderson, and see if he's still got something left in the tank. That's what just happened. That's what the Utz barbecue potato chip is. It's Ricky Henderson, 60-year-old Ricky Henderson.
Why is the, and I don't know that I even want to go down this road, why is the Utz barbecue potato chip like an old Ricky Henderson?
I mean, so many reasons. Number one, Utz potato chips are not, by any stretch of the imagination, the best potato chip. There's like four or five brands better than Utz potato chips. Second of all, even if they were the best, you know for a fact, Joe, that they are a huge advertiser on the New York Yankees. And morally speaking, you have no right to draft them for that reason alone.
That's
number three. The barbecue potato chip is like the fourth or fifth best flavor of potato chip. It's generally speaking pretty gross. So you've chosen the fourth or fifth best brand that is morally compromised because of its association with the New York Yankees, and then you've chosen like the fifth best flavor of that fourth or fifth best brand.
All right. I disagree with you on the brands. Utz chips are delicious. And I disagree with you on the barbecue, obviously, because barbecue chips are awesome. But I can't disagree with you about the moral issues with the Yankees.
Yeah.
That is a fair point. That is a fair point. Does this mean I have to stop buying them, or do I just have to start promoting them?
Listen, you do what you think is right. I know. I've made my choices. You can make yours. So, okay, for my fifth pick, I could choose Doritos, although I'm, as a protest, as a general protest for how overrated I think they are, I'm not going to choose them.
Yeah.
I could take Ritz crackers, which are delicious. Ritz crackers are wonderful crackers, but I'm not. I'm going to take the only salty snack that is directly related to the game of baseball that I love, which is the sunflower seed.
Oh, yeah.
Sunflower seeds are the best. Recently, because of my son's tournaments, I started, they sell them at these tournaments, you know? And I've started, and when I played baseball in high school, that was, I loved sunflower seeds. I would choose, put a giant wad of them in my cheek and then, and slowly crack them, learned how to crack them, to remove the sunflower seeds, spit out the shell. And I've recently like recovered that skill and now I can't stop. And they're not good for you, by the way. They're obviously the amount of sodium in like a quarter of a cup of sunflower seeds that are salted is enough sodium for the entire day.
It's a quarter of a cup. Yeah, it's a quarter of a cup.
Yeah. And it's way too much sodium. And the sunflower seeds themselves aren't particularly, they're high, very high in fat. They're not a good, it's not a good snack. However, I love them so much. I love them. And I ate so many of them during one particularly tense tournament game that when I got home, I had this feeling I haven't had since I was like 15, which is the side of my cheek was rough from the salt. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember that. I used to feel like this every day of my life because I would do it every day of practice. I would eat sunflower seeds. And I have a renewed love affair with the sunflower seeds. So I'll take them fifth overall.
Sunflower seeds are great. I'm not saying you saved your draft, but I'm saying that the sunflower seed is awesome. There are a couple of thoughts on the sunflower seed. One, what do you think of these people selling? And you can get them like if you go to even to like a Whole Foods or something, you can buy them by the scoop. Unshelled sunflower seeds.
The worst.
The worst.
A crime. An actual crime against humanity. By the way, it's the same as unshelled pistachios. What is the point?
Yeah, I agree.
Of the pistachio, if not to break it in half and eat it. The same as the sunflower seed. The unshelled sunflower seed is. I mean, look. If you're making a salad and the recipe for the salad calls for sunflower seeds, totally fine. That's a different thing. But just as like a snack, what are you doing? That is insane.
It is. It's totally nuts. First of all, I don't know the exact percentage, but don't you think like 88% of the sodium in sunflower seeds are in the shell? So that like literally when you put them in your mouth, all you do is get this huge wave of sodium, of salt.
Oh, I think it's 95%. If you actually look on the back of like David's sunflower seed, you can see it breaks it down for you. It breaks it like, you know, at the seed itself versus seed and shell. It actually breaks it down. I literally think it's 95% of the sodium is the shell.
It's incredible. It's incredible. And then, the whole point, and you're right about the pistachio too. I could have taken the pistachio. That actually would have been a really good pick. Pistachios.
Yeah, that was on my board too. The pistachio, but then you chose all nuts, so I decided to move on with my
Well, then I get the pistachio. That's good. no, but it's I love the sunflower. I love the ability to eat the sunflower when you put like a bunch of sunflower seeds in your mouth. The ability to eat them is such an awesome skill to have. You feel like at the end, I mean, you're not really eating that much, but you feel like you've really accomplished like something, right? You feel like
that's part of the fun.
In my mouth, and I ate all of them. I mean, it was awesome.
That's a huge part of it. And it's like it is a feeling of like process. You know, it's like it's not just like you just throw it in your mouth. It's like a thing. You choose it. You put it in. You crack it. You remove it.
Yes.
You put it. I used to when I was playing. I don't do this anymore, but when I was playing, I used to reassemble the shell. The goal was to crack the shell, remove the sunflower seed, tuck the sunflower seed in my other cheek, reassemble the shell, basically put the two halves of the shell together with like my tongue and teeth, and then spit the shell out whole. It's really fun. It doesn't always work because the shell doesn't always crack perfectly,
right?
But when it does and you can reassemble it, it's a very satisfying spit because it flies further because it's a little unit, you know.
They'll break apart in midair.
Yeah, they sometimes they do, but sometimes they're kind of weirdly sealed.
Oh, that's cool. All right, well that's our salty draft. nothing left to say on that. All right, one last meaningless thing to end this meaningless thing.
It's one last meaningless thing. Talk about sports and we draft things we know, like how beaches are terrible places to go. No hot fruit for Michael, nor Diet Coke for Joe. The podcast, whoa, it's one last whoa.
And you have the first one.
I'm scared of, I've never been in a cherry picker. I think that's what they're called, but I'm scared of them. The, like the little box with the sort of accordion, you know, thing that lifts up to, so people can trim trees.
Right. Right.
Like I've never been in one.
Right.
But when I see them, I get scared as if I am about to get into one. Like they seem so rickety and unstable. I'm nervous, especially when it's like a guy on the street who's going up to, like, you know, in LA, they have people go up and hack off old dead palm fronds from right. palm trees so that sure. they don't like fall and hurt people. And every time I see them, I'm like, don't get it. I'm like, get out of there. Get out of that thing. It's not safe. And I'm sure it is. It just, to me, I have a fear that I am going to somehow, against my will, be put into a cherry picker and then raised up into the air.
Raised up in the air. Now, is this a height thing? Now, do you, when you see people like climbing high, do you have that same feeling, or is it specific to the cherry picker?
I don't love heights. I'm not like, I can happily go up into a tall building. I can be on right. a roof. I can, it's not, I don't love them, but I'm not afraid of them. So right. I don't know if it's a height. I think it's just something about how unstable the cherry picker looks.
It
with that accordion
weird. Yeah,
lifting mechanism. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree. I do see people in those things, and it doesn't feel like, especially the way they're raised, like that arm does not seem, I mean, of course it is stable, but it doesn't seem stable. It seems like that there should be more of an elevator type lift to it rather than sort of a, you know, the arm unfolds and picks them up. And I think
it's also just like a wider base or something that I yeah. want from it. I can't quite tell.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that's nice and meaningless. My one last meaningless thing, actually a reader or listener or both sent this in, and I should know who that is, but I do not. But it's something I've been thinking about for a while. We have got to fix the technology on cereal boxes so that when you open cereal boxes and you can then, you know, you can then reseal them, you're supposed to be able to like use the flap on top to reseal them. They've gotten really, really flimsy on those things. Now, when you open the box, it tears in half. That cardboard is not the same quality, I think, as it used to be. I think they're really letting us down. And now you can't reseal cereal boxes nearly as well anymore because it, like, half of it is torn up and half of it's down. So I'm calling for a definite sort of an American, I think we could just build sort of American momentum to giving us cereal boxes that you can just open and then reseal.
I'm going to say this with 100% sincerity.
Yeah.
This is the best meaningless thing you've ever done. Yeah. In fact, it's the best one either of us has ever done.
I agree.
I was furious that you drafted Willy Mo Pena and Ricky Henderson in your draft, and I felt like it spoke ill of your character, but this has totally brought me back because this is a hugely important issue. Cereal box technology is terrible.
Terrible.
The box itself doesn't open properly. It certainly doesn't seal properly. The bags are often poorly made and they tear and they don't. So it's hard to keep the cereal fresh by sealing up the bag and then the box doesn't close properly. I would also add to this that there's a huge problem. If you have a pet, there's a huge national crisis involving dried pet food in yeah. terms of how you open the bag,
the
bags are, oh, some of them are literally impossible to open. You just have to like cut them with scissors.
Right.
And then they don't seal properly, obviously, because there's no way to seal them. And that means that the food gets stale and then your pet doesn't want to eat it. It's a there is a massive national crisis involving the mechanisms by which we both open and then seal for freshness various types of food for humans and pets. And this needs to be the top priority of the U.S. government. I don't think I haven't been following the news a lot lately. I don't think there's a lot going on. They should be able to get on this right away. And we should come together. This should be a bipartisan effort.
Absolutely.
To 100% focus on fixing the ways in which we package our food.
Yeah. Food containers that we are given, they're not up to what we
know.
What are we? What are we as a country?
Who are we as a people? Who are we? We need to do some real self-examination here, and we need to get to the bottom of like who we think we are as a people, as a country, as a nation of immigrants and of hardworking people who care about each other, who are a community. We need to come together and fix this problem because it is a huge problem.
It is. It is. I mean, who came in and helped win World War II? Who did that?
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes. When we put our mind to something in America, we can do it. We can accomplish it. And all that this takes, this huge problem, all it takes is us deciding that it's a problem that we need to fix it. And then we will see in a wonderful patriotic montage shot by Michael Bay with flags, American flags waving, and little kids running around with model planes like playing in the backyard.
Sure.
And kids like going down to the pond to go fishing at the old fishing hole. Yes, that's right. You'll see this beautiful montage of America the Beautiful coming together and to fix this thing, this problem that plagues us as a country.
It plagues us. And you're right. I mean, I think in a way, I mean, I'm glad to bring this finally up. I think both of us saying this can maybe lead us a little further. On the other hand, might not be meaningless enough.
No, it's still meaningless.
Yeah, all right. It's incredibly meaningless.
I mean, this bit that we're doing notwithstanding, it's utterly meaningless.
Oh,
yeah.
That's what's
no,
okay.
Don't worry. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
You're good. You're on solid ground in terms of how meaningless that was.
All right. So there you go. Another podcast in the books.
Yeah, well, listen, but preemptively, I'm going to say this because you've earned the right to just rest for a second. So I'm going to preemptively say, thanks for having me.
You're welcome. That was preemptive. I like it. It's totally new.